It's hard to believe Ken Burns has had a rule for what subject matter he takes on, given the diversity of his work ranges from the Civil War in Vietnam to baseball and jazz. But he is finally breaking through that limitation, sort of. Burns' latest two-part documentary on Leonardo da Vinci, a collaboration with daughter Sarah Burns and son-in-law David McMahon, is his first non-American subject and has to be by default. The United States wouldn't be founded for more than 250 years after da Vinci's death in 1519. But Burns is claiming the Italian polymath for America anyway, wrote IndieWire. In Telluride, Burns needs little introduction. The world-renowned, heavily garlanded documentary filmmaker is an honorary homie. He's also a member of the Telluride Film Festival Board of Directors and has come to town for over three decades, either to screen his own films at Film Fest or Mountain Film and or sign his books, and also to support the Telluride Historical Museum through the nonprofit's annual fundraiser, An Evening with Ken Burns. That event takes place Sunday, August 25th, and the evening includes a screening of Burns' 1985 Huey Long, a post-film Q&A, and a book and DVD signing. This is Susan V. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out. Delighted once again to be speaking with Ken Burns. Ken, thanks for taking time out of your crazy schedule to talk with me.
It's my pleasure, Susan. Happy to be with you.
Thank you. Let's begin with the subject of the screener at the upcoming An Evening with Ken Burns. Huey Long seems to be an obvious choice for this election year. Was that the rationale?
Not at all. It's so funny that now in retrospect, I go back and scratch my head and go, I can see how someone could think about it. It's my, by counting, it's either my third or my fourth film that was broadcast on PBS after Brooklyn Bridge, The Shakers, maybe The Statue of Liberty, or maybe Huey Long. I can't remember which actually came first. But it's been a while since I've seen it, and I've thought a lot about it, and I've recently. And so I just thought, oh, it'd be great to share it. It's complicated. And of course, it does have rhymes and echoes and and sort of, you know, sort of things that are going on with today. There's very difference between the populism of a Huey Long and the meism of, you know, one of the political candidates. So it's just, there's sort of apples and oranges. Huey actually got things done, and he got things done working against the corporations and for the poorer people of Louisiana, building them schools and hospitals and roads to get mm-hmm. them across the market and bridges to cross the Mississippi. And so to make a comparison is kind of a fool's errand. However, at the same time, Huey was, you know, had amassed more personal power than anybody else in the United States when he was for a time simultaneously the governor of Louisiana and a United States senator, and took his time resolving that conflict and controlled Louisiana top to bottom, which is what got him assassinated.
Great, thanks. Now let's go to the big picture, so to speak. How would you sum up the meta or the tie that binds your filmography, the subtext that connects baseball to the national parks, the Civil War, Vietnam, et cetera, and works in process like Holocaust and Hemingway, to touch upon just a few of the subjects over 40-plus years? So what's the tie that binds?
Well, they're all, with the exception of this upcoming one, all about American history. And so I have had the great privilege of making films about the U.S., but I've also made films about us, that is to say the lowercase two-letter plural pronoun. And mm-hmm. so all of the intimacy of us plus we and our, and mm-hmm. all of the majesty and the complexity and the contradiction and even the controversy of the U.S., it's been a spectacular space. And so there's not really a meta. It's just connected by a curiosity about the mechanics of my country and looking at it without any kind of romanticized overlay, so that you're just calling balls and strikes, and you have to be able to tolerate complexity and undertow in all the things. I'm working on a history right now that will be out next year, a massive history on the American Revolution. And, yeah. you know, you have people like George Washington or Thomas Jefferson or others who are incredibly complex and incredibly important, neither to let the pendulum swing from a romanticized, old-fashioned 19th century narrative of that Parson Weems got everybody to buy into about George Washington's perfection, nor do you wish the unforgiving swing of the other end of the pendulum to unforgiving revisionism to obtain. You need to be able to understand that, like all of us, he's a combination of neither and both, and you have to just like see it for what it is and call, as I said, balls and strikes. So the history that we've been interested in is incredibly complex, and I think it's been popular because people they recognize the complexity in their own lives, in themselves, and among their friends and family. And instead of being sold a kind of top-down, treacly version of American history, we've got a much more nuanced and complex version. And I think it attracts people because it feels true or truer.
So in that context, why make Leonardo? Or better, why step outside your box of American history and explore other than a homegrown experience?
Well, it was interesting. I was working on a film and had committed to working on a film about Benjamin Franklin, and one of the people who inspired that film and one of the people we interviewed for it is one of his principal biographers, Walter Isaacson, who's been a friend for years and years and years. And I was at dinner with Walter one night in Washington, D.C., long after the project had started, and he started to sell me on Leonardo. And, you know, he said, well, Leonardo's, you know, a scientist of his, the greatest scientist of his age and also the greatest artist. And you could say that Benjamin Franklin is a great artist in his writing abilities, and he's also a great artist in his political skills, and he's also a great scientist, the greatest scientist of his age. And I said, Walter, you know, I just don't do non-American topics. And I remember walking out from dinner, kind of sort of missed that he had kept pushing and pushing it. And I called my daughter Sarah and her husband Dave, as I do towards the end of the day, just to catch up. And we had already collaborated on the Central Park Five and on Jackie Robinson, and we're making a film on Muhammad Ali and have many other films, three or four, in the works now together. And I said, and Walter just tried to sell me on Leonardo. And they said, that's a great idea. And so I just said, of course it is. This is the arguably the most important person of the last millennium, and you know, lots of other people in the running for that award, but if you have to give it out, and certainly in the top five. And so we jumped into it, and what was great is that Sarah and Dave picked up their family, my grandkids, my two oldest grandchildren, and moved to Italy, to Florence for a year, from the summer of 22 to the summer of 23. They basically developed an extraordinarily new and I think refreshing grammar for the film that's different from anything we've done, because you've got somebody who feels so achingly contemporary at the same time that he's, you know, somebody from 500 years ago. And it's not just the inventions and the ideas and the dreams of inventions that could have never worked in his day, but just his curiosity and his way of looking at the world, and not, as we all do nowadays, put people in different categories. The scientist painted the Mona Lisa, and the artist did these extraordinary, anatomy and dissections of the human body. So they're one and the same. He would have never seen any difference. He was just asking, as the filmmaker Guillermo del Toro says in our film from the opening moments, he has just got more curiosity than anybody else. And that struck me, and it felt to me, you know, kind of American in its purest form. He also got a neighbor, Americo Vespucci, also from Florence, who travels. And the reason why, from the North Pole to the South Pole in the Western Hemisphere, we call these Americas, is the first name of his friend, Amerigo Vespucci. So I figured, okay, well, that's close enough. And my company, since before anybody ever heard of me, before the very first film called Brooklyn Bridge, which we showed last year or the year before, it was known, my company's been called Florentine Films. So I just thought, okay, we're there. Vinci, where he's from, he's Leonardo. Da Vinci means of Vinci, a little village, is outside of Florence. So, you know, this was like a kind of coming home, first time, maybe exception that proves the rule, but I'm never going to say never to anything else.
So in addition to stepping outside this country, you, Sarah, and David made some other changes in your approach to documentary filmmaking Could you sum those up briefly?
Well, that's what I was saying about a new and I think exciting grammar. A lot of it has to do with the music, Dave. David was very, very interested in a variety of music, but he settled on Caroline Shaw, the composer, who's just phenomenal. And basically, with the exception of a couple of, as we call it, needle drops, it's all her work, and it's fantastic. We also realized that here's a man in the the middle of the 15th and the early 16th century, but he's thinking of things that are universal. So there's no reason why you can't cut to footage, early footage from the early 20th century, or photographs, or rocket ships taking off, or all this sort of stuff. We can split the screen in two. We can split it into quarters. We can split it into 9 frames or 16 frames. You can do animation that sort of connects the art with the science. And all of that, I think, is refreshing and exciting for us to experiment with. And I give it entirely. The three of us are credited as the filmmakers, but I'll step back a step and just say this is mostly Sarah and Dave's mojo and energy on it. And it wasn't that I wasn't involved and wasn't involved at every moment, but they really led the charge on these kinds of things. And I think it's exhilarating, and I hope people find that as same as I do to sort of see this. And at the same time, it looks like a Ken Burns film too, of biographies and narrated by Keith David, who's a longtime narrator dating back to jazz and all of that. So
very thank exciting. You. And I ask you this question annually, but it's kind of only fair to talk about your relationship to PBS, your career twins with that company, which reaches millions of viewers on TV and online. So just let's sum that up again, because PBS deserves the credit.
They do indeed, and all the credit in a way. I don't think I could have pursued the work that I've pursued anywhere else on the dial. Maybe after I got famous or the films were successful, I could have jumped over to a premium cable or a streaming service, but they wouldn't have given me the kind of time that I'm able to take to do, say, you mentioned the Vietnam War, that took 10 and a half years. They'd give me the money in 1 half-hour pitch, no matter what it was, but they wouldn't give me 10 and a half years, and that's what it took to do it. It's sort of like a research project from the National Institute of Health for the National Science Foundation. It's not like an invested thing. So PBS has 1 foot tentatively in the marketplace and the other proudly out of it. And that's the kind of thing. I live in rural New Hampshire, where I fled to 45 years ago this week in order to be able to make my first film and put it all on the screen and survive. And when it was nominated for an Oscar, everybody said, oh, you're gonna come back to New York or go to LA. And I said, no, I'm staying here. And it's been allowed us to sort of work on these labor intensive things without the pressures. And the beginning of that, the setting the pick for that kind of attitude, it comes from PBS and, you know, all the other obvious things, most trusted brand in America, no commercials, all of that sort of stuff. There's other places now that do that, but I think you don't have, for me, it's a really wonderful discipline to do it. You know, I used to be, I'm a mentee of Chuck Jones, the animator, used to visit our beautiful Box Canyon. And he always loved the discipline of a cartoon that represented to him, and he'd count out the number of frames it was for the 7 minute or whatever it was cartoon that he had to do for Warner Brothers and Looney Tunes. And he lived within it. I'm very happy to live within the discipline and also the freedom. It allows me to tell you that every film that I put out is a director's cut. And that, another way to put it, is that if you don't like any of these films, it's all my fault, and I've got nobody to blame. I've got no one to blame. You know, it's not, as I have friends, even A-list directors, who perpetually, you know, complain about the inability to get this or that done or some aspects of constraint. If we need to do it, PBS is sort of saying, you know, well, you're raising the money, and they're very generous as well. But you know, you get to do it your way. So yeah, but no PBS, no me.
Okay, final question. Since it's, you arrive in the run-up to the Telluride Film Festival, do you see that event as an agent for social change, or is art for art's sake? You'd like entertainment pure and simple, or both?
Well, it's most definitely both, and yet we favor the latter. We want to just put stuff out into the world. It's not me I'm saying, I don't know why I'm saying we, but the people who, the experts, the geniuses who planned this greatest of all festivals, because remember, no one knows what's being shown there. They come here, which is not an easy thing to do, as a kind of cinematic act of faith, trusting that the chef, whatever's on the menu, will be great. And instead of, you know, dumping a dump truck full of, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of films, 150 in some places, you've got this carefully curated, you know, 35 or so films, and you won't be able to see them all. You'll miss something good, and you'll see something that you may not like, but you've never, ever questioned why that they chose it. So, I mean, I know of only really one other festival where that's the case, and that would be New York. But in New York, they've already announced the schedule for a late September, early October festival. Here, it's coming up in a few weeks, and nobody knows
right. What
they're going to show, and you find out the day before what it is, and everybody's more or less already arrived there, and that's incredibly exciting experience. And so we learned very early on that would come a week before so that we can hike and see friends that we've made over the 30 plus years. I first came in 85 and then came in 90 and have never not come, with the exception of 20 when it was shut down for COVID. And then I had family issues that I had to attend to. And I got there in 22, but had to leave before the festival started. So, you know, we've been there, and it's a part of our lives. It's where my grown children, including Sarah Burns, kind of grew up. It was the first town where they could just be told, go do whatever you want. And it was, and it's where my second set of gals also have grown up. And what's so great, with the exception of my 19-year-old who's in college, and because they idiotically start college early in before Labor Day, she's missed it for the few years of that, but my little one and my grandchildren come, so it's pretty great. So I get three of my four daughters and two of my four grandchildren.
Okay, this has been Susan Vibrock speaking once again with Ken Burns. His Evening with Ken Burns takes place again Sunday, August 25th. The doors open at 5:30. The screening takes place at 6:00. The evening includes the screening of Yui Long, a post-film Q&A, and book and DVD signing. Ken, thanks once again for taking the time to talk with me.
It's my pleasure. I'll see everybody there at the high school and talk about Yui Long. Very exciting. Thank you, Sue.
Thank you, Ken. Bye.
Okay. Good?
Okay.
All good? All good? Still there?
I am. I'm trying.
Good.